Information discussed in this podcast may be sensitive in nature to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. The state of Connecticut is the third smallest state in the United States, with a population of around 3.5 million. You'll find the perfect mix of coastal towns and rural small towns. Connecticut is often referred to as the gateway to New England, as it sits on the southern point of the New England section of the U.S. While Connecticut might be small, there are plenty of unsolved mysteries to be had here. There are actually a total of 197 unsolved missing person cases. In addition to missing person cases, there are also 1,777 unsolved murders out of Connecticut dating back to 1980. Over the last couple of years, I covered a few stories that had ties to Connecticut, but only one that was based in Connecticut itself, and that was the case of Billy Smolinski Jr. If you haven't heard his case yet, please go search it on our website and give it a listen. For anyone that follows true crime or missing person cases specifically, you might also be familiar with the Jennifer Doulos story, a missing mom out of Connecticut whose story has generated a lot of media attention. Jennifer vanished back in May of 2019, with her ex-husband having been charged with tampering with evidence, and then later actually charged with her murder. But then he would cowardly take his own life while out on bail. Jennifer has not been found. While diving into Connecticut's cases, there were some that stuck out to me as really interesting or bizarre for one reason or another. The stories of Kenneth Reed, Bianca LeBron, and Mark Randall Johnson have remained unsolved, and all three remain missing to this day. Two of the cases have had a few leads here and there to follow, but no signs of the person. One of the cases might be one of the most mystifying I've ever come across. Where are Kenneth Reed, Bianca LeBron, and Mark Johnson? Hello, and welcome to a bonus episode of the Where Are They podcast. But these cases are cases that have remained unsolved for years. I actually came across these stories while doing research on another project, and I wanted to give some insight on them. Here are a few Connecticut cases that I found to be quite mysterious. Kenneth Scott Reed. Kenneth was born July 31st, 1964, and lived in Fairfield, Connecticut for a while. In 1989, Kenneth was 24 years old, and he had worked his way up to assistant manager at BB Dairy. BB Dairy was a restaurant located in the Norwich Town Mall. On March 24th, 1989, around 3:30 p.m., Kenneth clocked out and left his job at the BB Dairy and headed over to his parents' house. Before going to his parents' house, he decided to stop and get a coffee. This was something he did often. Kenneth was known to be a coffee addict. Kenneth arrives at his parents' house on Forest Street in Norwich and pulls his car up to the front of the house. Kenneth was currently living with friends out in Colchester, but he often went or stayed with his parents because it was much closer to his work. Although according to Google Maps, Colchester is only about 20 minutes from Norwich Town Mall, so it doesn't seem that far. But his parents' house was only a couple of minutes away. He arrived at his parents' house, and he parked his car in kind of an odd fashion in front of the driveway. A neighbor came out and found Kenneth's car parked oddly and actually walked up to his parents' house. But his parents said Kenneth wasn't there. In fact, he had never even come in the house. His dad did mention that he'd seen Kenneth pull up in the car earlier, but he never came inside. They weren't immediately alarmed, however. They thought maybe he hopped in the car of a friend or went somewhere with a friend. Kenneth was 24 years old. They looked around the car and they found no signs of a struggle, but they did find his full cup of coffee still inside the car. Kenneth would be reported missing 3 days later. His family said they thought this whole time he had probably just been with friends, which was their reasoning for not reporting him missing sooner. Kenneth had no criminal history and was described as an easygoing and responsible kind of guy. To make things even more bizarre, Kenneth had been planning an upcoming vacation in which he was going to be taking 10 days off of work. A friend said that he had even contacted a travel agency to make plans, although he had never finalized those plans with that agency. But his family was completely unaware of these vacation plans. It seems only friends and coworkers knew about it. And Kenneth's paychecks were never picked up from the dairy. His brother also spent weeks searching for Kenneth himself and missing work to do so. He also fought continuously for media coverage of Kenneth's case. Kenneth was not known to have any enemies or be involved in any type of high-risk behavior. He did not do drugs, and he didn't run with a rough crowd in any way, at least according to everyone who knew him. Norwich Town Mall and Norwich, Connecticut in general, is near the Yantic River and is just a 40-minute drive to the Atlantic Ocean. While the area of Norwich was fairly built up at the time, there are plenty of rural, undeveloped areas just outside of the city. The disappearance of Kenneth Scott Reed remains one of Connecticut's most bizarre unsolved mysteries. Kenneth is described as a Caucasian male with blonde hair and brown eyes. He had a dark-colored mustache at the time of his disappearance, and he stood 5'8" tall, weighing around 145 pounds when he vanished in 1989. He was 24 years old. He had been wearing gray pants and white Nike Air Jordan sneakers with blue stripes. Anyone with any information on Kenneth Scott Reed is asked to contact the Connecticut State Police at 203-696-2500. Bianca Elaine LeBron. On November 7th, 2001, fifth grade student Bianca LeBron arrived at Elias Howe Elementary School, just as she did every school day. This day, however, she told her friends that she was going to be leaving soon as her uncle was picking her up from school to go shopping. She allegedly even asked some of these friends to go with her, but they all declined. At 8:30 a.m., before classes officially began for the day, Bianca was seen getting into a full-size brown van with a young Hispanic male. Everyone believed this to be her uncle, including her classmates and teachers, so no one questioned anything. By 4:30 p.m., Bianca's parents realized she was missing. After first believing her to be with friends, they started calling around for her. But by 8:30 p.m., they realized something was very wrong, and they reported her missing to local police. At the time she disappeared, she was living with her mother and stepfather. And Bianca didn't have any uncles at all, or anyone close to their family that she even referred to as an uncle. No one in Bianca's family or at the school recognized that brown van, and no one had any idea who this man could be, the man that picked her up. The school fell under great scrutiny for Bianca being able to leave with this unidentified man, and lawsuits would be forthcoming in the years ahead. The Elias Howe Elementary School is no longer open. Bianca LeBron remains missing to this day. She is described as a Hispanic female, 4'11" tall, weighing just around 100 pounds when she was last seen in November of 2001. She was only 10 years old. Bianca has long dark hair, and she was believed to be wearing a green, beige, and brown camouflage shirt with beige pants, black boots, and a dark blue denim jacket. Anyone with any information at all about Bianca LeBron is asked to contact the Bridgeport Police Department at 203-576-7671. Mark Randall Johnson. Mark Johnson was last seen walking away from his home on Cider Mill Road in Toland, Connecticut, between 11 and 11:25 p.m. on October 24, 2006. He was not carrying a cell phone with him when he disappeared, and he did not have a vehicle. When he didn't come home and by the next day still couldn't be found, his wife reported him missing. But a search of the area turned up only the hat he was wearing, nothing else. His wife Donna claimed that Mark had called her several times after he vanished, but authorities were never able to confirm this, and it was never clear where she thought he might have been calling from, or whose phone he might have been using. Donna also stated that Mark had been dealing with depression lately. She believes that Mark left home because he was afraid of going to jail. In 2004, he had been put on probation for some drug charges, and he allegedly had not been complying with his probation terms. So was that enough to make someone want to disappear? Mark's lawyer even came forward and stated that Mark was in no danger of going to jail due to this probation violation. And Mark's family said he had never done anything like this before. And Mark had a son that had meant the world to him. No one, aside from possibly Donna, thinks that Mark would have left on purpose. Donna herself has an interesting history, having been charged with bigamy on multiple occasions, and in early 2006, she was charged with larceny. In March of 2009, Donna would be charged with making a false police report, harassment to the second degree, and larceny once again. The original incidents happened from 2006 to 2007, and she would be put on probation for years. Mark's family firmly believes that she knows more than she is saying about his disappearance. Her stories don't add up, and her behavior has been odd. His sister initiated the process of having Mark legally declared deceased in 2010. Mark is described as a Caucasian male standing 5'10" tall and weighing around 175 pounds when he was last seen in 2006. Mark was 42 years old. He was believed to have been wearing a gray long-sleeved shirt, dark-colored jeans, dark-colored rubber snow boots, a blue baseball cap with the letters NY, and a tan suede hat. Anyone with any information about Mark Johnson is asked to contact the Connecticut State Police at 860-896-3200. So what are your thoughts on Kenneth, Bianca, and Mark? Thank you so much for listening to the stories of Kenneth, Bianca, and Mark today. Three very mysterious disappearances in the state of Connecticut. Cold cases are being solved more and more as technology advances. Dozens of new alerts just this week about cold cases that have recently been solved. Every day, more and more answers are found. The case of Lisa Joy White takes us back to Vernon, Connecticut in 1974. But this is the story of a 13-year-old girl who seemed to vanish into thin air after leaving a friend's house. Keith LaLima's story takes us to Norwich, Connecticut, and back to the year 1981. There were some suspicious and questionable circumstances leading up to Keith's disappearance, but very few clues as to his whereabouts were ever uncovered. Doreen Vincent's story is tragic, and the answer of what happened to her seems to be right in front of our eyes. Yet there has been very little evidence to follow and no clues as to where Doreen Vincent could be. Doreen was just 12 years old when she went missing from Wallingford, Connecticut. Where are Lisa Joy White, Keith LaLima, and Doreen Jane Vincent? Hello, and welcome to the Where Are They podcast and a bonus episode continuing our look into unsolved cases in Connecticut. These cases are going to take us back several years, but each one, in their own way, resonated with me as I read through their case file. One case that is completely mystifying, another that is frustrating, and yet another one that is so tragically sad. I do have hopes that one day each of these cases will be solved. Lisa Joy White, Vernon, Connecticut. Lisa Joy White was a young teenager with no fear back in 1974. She was 13 years old, but no stranger to trouble. On October 31st, 1974, Lisa's mother received a phone call from the police saying that they had picked up Lisa. She was with a group of teens driving down a highway when they threw a pumpkin out of the window. The police stopped them and discovered they were drinking, and Lisa, being underage, quite underage, was taken to the station. That night, she fought with her mom and she was grounded. The next day, just after her mom left for work, Lisa snuck out of the house and went to a friend's house. She made the 2-mile walk to her friend's, stayed for a bit, and then left. She never made it back home. Lisa had left a note for her mother that read, "You think I'm a little girl, but I'm not." Authorities believed that she had likely run away, seeing as she had just been in trouble, she was grounded, and the fact that she left this note, it seemed that this was all Lisa's plan. It was also learned that Lisa had an 18-year-old boyfriend, something her mother did not approve of. Friends also said that Lisa often hung out with boys much older than her. Could this have led her into something nefarious? Lisa was only 13 years old. The crowd of kids she was hanging out with seemed to be taking her down a troubled path. Lisa was very fit and very active. She wasn't always getting into mischief. She was a good dancer, she was a cheerleader, and she was a gymnast. In 1974, at 13 years old, Lisa had a promising future and a whole life ahead of her. So how deep was the investigation into her disappearance? It's truly hard to say, especially with this happening so long ago. Lisa's sister said that she did remember the media and cameras being outside of their home and following them around, so it seems the case did receive some attention. Lisa's DNA is in the national database, and over the years, she has been ruled out as several Jane Does that have been found deceased. Her sister went on to open her own dance studio and thinks of Lisa every day. Sadly, in 2012, Lisa's mother passed away, never having answers as to her daughter's whereabouts or what could have happened on that November day. Many do believe that Lisa's case may be linked to other girls that vanished over the course of the 10 years, all from Vernon, Connecticut area. There hasn't been anything concrete to link them, but having 5 girls, age 7 to 20, all vanishing from the same small town area is enough to make someone wonder. Of those 5 girls, 2 were later found deceased, while 3 remain missing. All 5 cases are still unsolved. Lisa Joy White is described as a Caucasian female standing 5 foot tall and weighing around 110 pounds when she was last seen. It was November 1st, 1974. She was 13 years old then, and would today, if alive, be 62. She left her house that day wearing green pants and a blue denim jean jacket. Lisa has blonde hair and blue eyes. Anyone with any information on Lisa Joy's whereabouts or what may have happened November 1st, 1974 to Lisa, please contact the Vernon Police Department at 860-872-9126. Keith LaLima, Norwich, Connecticut. Keith Lalima was born May 27th, 1960, and grew up in the Norwich, Connecticut area with 9 siblings. In the early morning hours of May 7th, 1981, Keith was at the Village Green nightclub. In 1981, this was a popular club known for music and dancing, and it kind of had a disco vibe. The place also had a reputation for serving underage kids knowingly. But Keith was 21 and he was enjoying his night out until things turned ugly. While the details of the dispute aren't really known, witnesses said that Keith got into a physical altercation with someone at the bar. And shortly after this altercation happened, he decided to leave and left the club on foot, planning to walk home to his mother's house where he was living with his girlfriend and young son. Keith never made it home, however, and searches turned up no signs of Keith anywhere. Authorities weren't sure what to make of his case, but as time went on, they came to believe that that altercation at the bar quite possibly played a role in his disappearance. Keith Lalima's mother died in 1997, having to live 16 years not knowing what happened to her son. Keith also left behind 9 siblings and a young son of his own. If the altercation at this bar was what led to his disappearance, someone out there knows something. This bar has since been shut down. Keith is described as a Caucasian male standing 6'1" tall and weighing around 175 pounds when he was last seen in May of 1981. Keith was 21 years old then and would today be 63. He was last seen wearing a red and blue plaid shirt, blue jeans, and a blue baseball cap. Keith has blondish brown hair and hazel eyes. Anyone who might have any information on the whereabouts of Keith Lalima is asked to contact the Norwich Police Department at 860-886-5561. Doreen Jane Vincent, Wallingford, Connecticut. I wanted to share Doreen's story with you because it's so tragically sad and there still has been no justice for Doreen. This story takes us back to 1988, and regardless of what everyone believes happens, this case remains unsolved. Doreen Jane Vincent was born September 30th, 1975, to Dad Mark and Mom Donna. Donna and Mark would not stay together, however, and up until the age 12, Doreen lived in Bridgeport, Connecticut. There are conflicting reports as to who she lived with during this time, but what we do know is that in May of 1988, she would move with her father and stepmom to Wallingford, Connecticut. It was soon apparent that Doreen was not happy about this move. She missed her friends back in Bridgeport, and she found that Wallingford didn't offer up much for her to do. Doreen was almost a teenager, and being sociable was important to her. Their home on Whirlwind Hall Road was located in a pretty rural area. During these days after the move, Doreen argued with her father a lot, at least according to some of the neighbors. The neighbors said that they could hear arguing while walking by. They couldn't make out the specifics of what was being said, but they could definitely tell it was arguing. On June 15th, 1988, Mark and Doreen were home while Mark's wife, Sharon, headed out to church for the evening. What happened during those evening hours is questionable, although we will hear some different accounts later. At 11:30 p.m., when Sharon came home from church, Doreen wasn't home. Mark told Sharon that Doreen was missing. She had left. And Sharon just wasn't sure what to believe. Doreen had been miserable there. She did want to go back to Bridgeport. Could she have run away? But something in her heart told her that her husband might have been lying to her. On June 17th, 2 days later, Doreen's biological mother, Donna, was supposed to pick Doreen up, but she couldn't get a hold of anyone at the house. On June 18th, Donna drove up to the home to find her ex-husband outside doing yard work. He told her that Doreen had gone to his mother's house and he wasn't worried at all. Donna wanted to report her missing, saying that she knew something was wrong, but Mark kept insisting that nothing was wrong, that Doreen was fine. Donna reported her daughter as missing anyhow. Now, at first, authorities believed that Donna might have just run away. But soon they realized that Mark had told them multiple conflicting stories, which made them think that maybe something else had happened. First, he said that Doreen and he had argued around 8 p.m., and then Mark had gone out to his workshop. When he came back in the house at 9 p.m., Doreen was gone. Later, he told authorities that he and Doreen had a physical altercation, and he shoved Doreen into a window, causing it to break. Then there's the story that he told of Doreen having gone to his mother's house, which seems like that would be easily verifiable. It's worth noting that Sharon, Mark's wife at the time, did not believe her husband, and she would actually divorce him shortly after Doreen went missing. A year after Doreen's disappearance, authorities searched Mark's mother's house. And during the search, they found personal belongings of Doreen's, items that Mark had said Doreen had taken with her. Now, during this time, they were definitely keeping an eye on Mark as a person of interest. There was also a family member that was high on their list as a person of interest as well, and they actually investigated this person to some extent, although the details were never made clear. And this was a man in Doreen's family who had a history of being a sexual predator and a pedophile. No additional details beyond that were ever released. For a while, it was also thought that maybe Haddon Clark could have been responsible. Clark is a serial killer out of Maryland, and he was believed to possibly have more victims that went unidentified across the New England states. Police had a list of young girls and women that had disappeared that they felt might have fallen victim to Haddon Clark. Doreen Vincent was on that list as a possible victim. Over the years, there were very few clues to go on in this case, but law enforcement always kept their eyes on Mark Vincent. Even when he kind of fell off the radar and left no forwarding address for a while, they still wanted to keep tabs on Mark Vincent. In 2020, authorities announced that they were reclassifying Doreen's case from missing to homicide. They also stated that they hoped to have an arrest warrant within the year and an arrest regarding her disappearance. That didn't exactly happen, but in February of 2022, Mark Vincent was arrested and charged with theft of a firearm and criminal possession of a firearm. During that time, Mark had been living with his son, Paul, and when authorities interviewed Paul, he stated that he did believe that his father knew more than he was saying about Doreen and that he was possibly involved in her disappearance. Doreen's family is still fighting for justice for Doreen, who disappeared at the age of 12. And to her friends and family, she will always be just 12 years old. Doreen is described as a Caucasian female, 5'4" tall, and weighing around 110 pounds when she was last seen in June 1988. She was 12 years old and would today be 48. Doreen has brown hair and hazel eyes. Anyone with any information on the whereabouts of Doreen Jane Vincent is asked to contact the Wallingford Police Department at 203-294-2800. Thank you so much for listening to these stories today. The stories of Lisa Joy, Keith LaLima, and Doreen have remained unsolved for far too long. With the new technology we have and more cold cases being solved every day, I still believe these cases can and will be solved. Thank you also for being here and supporting our show and our mission. If you have any feedback or case suggestions for us, you can always hit me up on social media or email me at canwefindthem@gmail.com. We will be back again very soon with another unsolved missing persons case. And until then, stay safe and hug your loved ones.